The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs, we don't
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast.
Margaret Kimberly is a New York-based writer who Dr. Cornel West has called one of the few great truth-tellers who, along with Glenn Ford, Adolf Reed Jr., and Bruce Dixon, preserved her integrity during the Obama years. She has been an editor and senior columnist for the Black Agenda Report since its inception in 2006, and she is the author of the book Prejudicial, Black America and the Presidents, which is due out from the imprint Truth to Power in February of next year. Margaret Kimberly is also a regular guest on this podcast, and I'm glad to have her back. This time we discuss her skepticism regarding the impeachment of Donald Trump and the limits of the Democratic Party. It's Monday, December 23rd, 2019, and I'm Douglas Lane, the host of this podcast and the publisher of Zero Books. This week's podcast is available in full for everyone, but our patrons get access to two podcasts every week, Pop the Left and Zero Squared. So if you're not already a patron, look us up on Patreon and help us out. It's the right thing to do as we come to the end of 2019. The music you're listening to right now is an 8-bit version of Do They Know It's Christmas? But in just a moment, you'll be listening to Margaret Kimberly and I discuss the failure of the impeachment of Donald Trump. You are an impeachment skeptic, it seems to me.
Very much so.
Would that be fair?
It is, yeah.
Do you find that to be a position that gets you a lot of flack?
Yes. Well, anything that's supposed to stop Trump or hurt Trump is elevated in importance. But that's why they tell us things are more important than they actually are. So, yeah, I understand how that happens.
I feel as though, especially considering that the Republicans are unlikely to actually kick the bum out of office, this has to be considered as a political question. Like, how effective is it in energizing Democratic voters, and how effective is it in getting independent voters to be to abandon Trump and to be interested in whoever the Democratic nominee happens to end up being?
Mm-hmm.
And on that front, I don't know if what the evidence is exactly. It doesn't seem very likely to me to be having that kind of positive effect, that you might want as a political move. But was that the aim? Was the Democrats' aim, do you think, from the beginning, just to do damage to Trump and try to weaken him for the election, or was there something else going on here?
Well, I think people like Nancy Pelosi never wanted it. But they gave in to a demand from the rank and file. And we have to also say that Trump, with his stupid phone call, gave the Democrats a gift. Russiagate turned out to be not what everybody had been told. And, it seems like forever ago, but it was just a few months ago in July, after the Mueller report. Well, it was released in the spring, but it was clear there was no evidence of collusion between Trump and Russian individuals or Russian government. And all Mueller had was process crimes, people who lied to the FBI, mostly because they were tricked into it. And Paul Manafort, who, is a crook. He's in jail for cheating on his taxes. It's bank and tax fraud. It's ironic, actually. He in his work with the former president of Ukraine, he and anybody else lobbying in Ukraine was trying to get him to move closer to the EU and away from Russia. So most of what we were told about him was false. All Mueller ended up with was an indictment of Russians that he says are GRU agents, people who will never show up in the United States, never go on trial, so the indictment's worthless. And then the Democrats, overreaching, Schiff and Nadler and others, insisted on Mueller testifying, and his testimony was a disaster. So Russiagate, if not dead, had lost a lot of its power. But Trump being Trump, instead of declaring victory and leaving it alone, he gets on the phone with the Ukrainian president, and he did something that was, I would say, improper, questionable, linking. Now, it's perfectly legal for him to ask the Ukrainians to investigate something, because there is an agreement going back to the 90s between the two countries, and it's perfectly legal for him to ask. But he connected it with Joe Biden and made a mess of it. And gave the Democrats an in. But it's pretty thin, actually, if you look at what they have. And then you can see it with the articles of impeachment. They say, and it's questionable to me, that it was an abuse of power for him to have raised the issue. And also that the fact that he's fighting the subpoena is obstruction of justice. Now, you have the right to fight a subpoena. So there really isn't that much there, but I think people wanted it. Democrats wanted the Democrats, Democratic leadership were feeling the pressure. And this, I think, is more a get out the vote effort. Now, the best way to get out the vote is to give people something they want. But that is off the table for the Democratic Party leadership. They don't want to give us anything we want. They're hoping to beat the Republicans by threading this needle of, saying Trump is bad over and over again and doing a better job. I hope they're planning to do a better job with voter outreach, because that's what killed Hillary Clinton, the lack of a get out the vote effort in swing states. Excuse me, only 78,000 votes, which, you know, if you have $1 billion, you should be able to pull off. But at any rate, So that's where they are. There's this demand. I think there are Democrats like Schiff. I don't know why anybody is impressed with that guy. He's a grandstander, and he's not even very smart. He, the Mueller testimony was a complete debacle. It was only Trump's stupidity that gave him an in again. And now it seems pretty clear to me and other observers that Pelosi has made a deal with Mitch McConnell. They have restricted their investigation to these two questionable articles of impeachment. In return, there's not going to be a trial. The Republicans are not going to bring Joe Biden into it, who, despite the fact that he's clearly a train wreck, a lot of them are still backing him. So, you know, they get a little bit. So the Democrats look like they're fighting Trump. The Republicans go along but say, well, you can't do too much, and they agree. And look what's happened. The Democrats vote again to support Trump's defense spending, including this people make fun of and sneer at the Space Force. Well, the Democrats just supported it. They didn't fight for anything. The ban on transgender people being in the military, all these things they went along with. So reapproved, the Patriot Act, but it keeps being reapproved, and I guess it'll go on and on and on forever. So they keep doing what the Republicans want them to do. So it's clear they're not a real opposition. And Ukrainegate is being used to give the impression that they are, and to resurrect what people had been whipped up into a frenzy about, which they would not have done if Trump were smarter. They wouldn't even have that. So,
you say that Trump was stupid to make that phone call. If it's true that he had the legal right to ask for an investigation, and it's also true, let's say, that he didn't really attach funding for the military aid, that he didn't attach a military aid to his request directly, and maybe it was never attached. I'm not sure if that's all true. What was really stupid about that phone call? Just that it gave them an opportunity to trump up these allegations, or was there something improper there at the heart of that call?
I mean, it's mostly optics to me. The fact that Joe Biden is going to run against him and he brings up Biden and this request to investigate something, that's problem. It's very problematic. I don't know if it's actually illegal, but it's just stupid. Just leave Biden's name out of it. And if Trump were smarter, he'd let Biden stay in. And then if Biden gets the nomination, then bring up the issue of the conflict of issue of interest where he set up his son to be on the board of some Ukrainian gas company. Don't say anything about it. The other thing is Trump, you know, there are many questionable things about, you know, Russiagate orthodoxy, namely that the Russians hacked into the DNC servers. There's no evidence of that anybody hacked. Julian Assange just said he got a leak, and that's what WikiLeaks does. They get leaks, and he was physically given those documents. There are people who say they know the identity of the person who turned over the information to WikiLeaks. The only firm hired by the Democrats, CrowdStrike, say that they have proof of a Russian hacking. There is no independent corroboration of it. And Mueller didn't even look into that. So rather than just stick with that, Trump goes off on this wild goose chase about servers that are possibly in the Ukraine. And excuse me, he's not even smart enough to stick with what would be a winning issue for him. And so that is, so he gives, and in doing so, he gives life to what should have been discredited by now. The whole Russiagate narrative should have been discredited, but it hasn't been because of Trump himself.
He's maybe like stupid, like Inspector Clouseau or someone like that, where he accidentally wins through his stupidity and clumsiness, you know, like
yeah.
He accidentally solves the crime because he fumbles around with this. But it seems like to me that the Russiagate investigation and now the Ukrainegate impeachment may end up helping him overcome real opposition. In other words, it distracted away from criticisms of his administration and style that might have stuck if it hadn't been for this sort of bureaucratic, officious approach and one based on, you know, only pseudo opposition.
Right.
So it could be that, you know, he's sort of giving the Democrats what they need to continue to impale themselves on their own sword here. But I guess it would be, if that's the case, it seems most likely that would be kind of an accidental, like he's the luckiest man alive in a way.
Well, he is. Because he's got a fake opposition. That's the thing that makes him luckiest. They always look for, Democrats always look for excuses to move to the right. And ever since he won, instead of talking about what they did wrong, how they screwed up to allow this to happen, they say, and this is what they always do, well, we've got to get the Trump voter. So we can't be too far to the left. We got to get the Trump voter. Unfortunately, that argument takes hold in the absence of, any other narrative being allowed into corporate media discourse. So they don't talk about what would get voters to come out, which was namely to turn away from the neoliberal policies that they have been living on for the past now almost 30 years. So he gives them an opportunity to have an in again, but it's the same crooked stuff. And also there's no recognition of the fact that, and I don't know, we've already been through this. We saw 60 million people vote for him in 2016. People who like him don't have a reason not to like him. They don't have any reason not to like Trump. because they like him. And you know, and it's not just Trump. You know, I've seen this with other people, with Obama voters. When people really like somebody, they don't want to hear anything against them. They don't want to hear any facts. They don't want to hear it. They have tied themselves to him. He's their guy, and they're sticking with him. And the fact that Russiagate ended with a whimper, not a bang, only helps. And the Democrats have chosen not to really fight him and the Republicans with the things that would really motivate new people. You have to get new people. That's what Obama did. I mean, it turned out to be phony, the change he talked about. But I mean, there was a tremendous growth in voter participation in 2008. It was huge. And combined with it, he and his team did have a kick-ass get-out-the-vote effort. So that could be done again. But if, you know, Biden was revealed a few days ago that he actually said, we don't want to, you know, it's not good for one party to be in power too much. And we need some Republicans along. He because he's so dumb, he blurts out what's Democratic Party policy anyway. And so that's really where they stand. They really want to just cut deals with Republicans. They don't want to give us what we want, because the things we want endanger their relationship with corporate interests. People want Medicare for all. People don't love their health insurance. They are being scared out of it by the constant propaganda against Medicare for all and other things. How are you going to pay for that? And, you know, you'd lose your insurance. It would be replaced with something that works better for you. So they muddy the waters and make people think they shouldn't have something that they really want and need. So, you know, it's a very sad story. And so now we have Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them having made this deal with the Republicans after all this talk about impeachment. It's really, they've agreed to present something watered down, and the Republicans go with it, and they give Trump, you know, what he wants. And but they promised not to touch Biden or bring up Biden and his son. And here we have a phony effort. He will not be. The Republicans have no, they don't have any incentive to remove him. Why would they? Their people like him. They're the ones, they got the point. They didn't think he was going to win either. But they know that those 60 million people are going to vote for him again. So they're not going to get rid of him. So, and the Democrats are being disingenuous. So here we are.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that the Democrats know that this is a loser, this impeachment approach, and they're sort of just getting it over with, and cutting a deal to get out of the situation for themselves and protect their front runner.
Right. And they can say, well, we impeached him, but, you know, the Republican controlled Senate wouldn't remove him. So they get to say that they did it, and they can talk about all roads lead to Putin or whatever the hell is they're going to say. And most people, as you were just pointing out, don't want to hear anything that differs from that, because then you're a Trumpite, you're a, you know, Trump and left, or you're something if you even try to analyze this or question any of it.
I don't want to, but I feel like I have to push back on one thing that you said, which is that the voters will come out if you give them what they want. Now, I know that's got to be true. You know, it's almost an axiom, right? But on the other hand, we just had this fiasco in the UK.
Uh-huh.
Right? And Corbyn had probably the most progressive, you know, agenda or manifesto for the Labour Party since the 30s or something. You know, it was just everything in the kitchen sink approach. You know, every social program that he could move in, everything from protecting the NHS to free broadband for everyone to, you know, lowering the age that you could get your pensions to on and on and on and on. It was just and in a lot of ways, it was a very good, you know, program or platform. I of course was supporting Corbyn, but it didn't work. I mean, they had a historic defeat.
Right.
And I worry that even a progressive like Sanders, if he gets the nomination, even someone who's coming to the American public with, you know, welfare, I'm sorry, not welfare, Medicare for all.
Welfare state, welfare state, you could say that, yeah.
A welfare state, yeah, with a welfare state agenda, will not be able to get the excitement needed to get the independent voters out, that there isn't a love of social spending and state intervention, even in the working class, the way that you might expect there to be.
Well, the thing with Corbyn, his problem was Brexit. And his problem was that a lot of Labour constituencies, they voted to leave back in 2016. And I think they made a tactical error the last election, and he did much better than expected. And he, all along, he said, we will stick with the result. And the people voted for Brexit, so we're going to leave. We're going to leave the EU. And this time, they tried to have it both ways. They said, well, we're going to have a second referendum. And that made many Labour voters angry. They're saying, well, we already told you what we wanted. And they had a good point. I'm not going to, you know, demean them completely. They're like, what, we're going to vote again until you get what you want? We told you what we wanted. And I think he should have gone. There's a left-wing argument for Brexit. The EU demands austerity. And he could have made the argument, I want to do all these things, but I can't do them as long as we're in the EU. We've got to leave the EU. I'm going to respect what you said. And by leaving the EU, we can make these other things work. Now, he might have lost. It might have been closer. They, at some one point, there were polls showing a hung parliament. It could have been something like that, but there were people who I respect, people like George Galloway, Marcus Papadopoulos, who said all along that changing his mind on Brexit was going to kill him with those voters, and they were quite correct. So it's not, I don't think that's an exact analogy, because there's nothing like Brexit and nothing comparable here that I think would trip him up. But I think the thing that is important about that election, it's not that people won't vote for that stuff. It's the effect of propaganda. And Corbyn was called an anti-Semite. He was, and I don't think people, I don't think people believe that. But if you have a constant negative, something like that, over and over, a constant drumbeat of negativity against someone, it works. Because then you don't hear anything positive about the person. So even if you don't think he's an anti-Semite, you hear a constant attack against him. The target is thrown off. He spends a lot of time denying the attack, in his case, denying being an anti-Semite, which is just absurd that he would have to say that. That he can't stay on message. He can't get his message out. And so then I would hear people say, well, I just don't like Corbyn. It has an effect. It's like background music. You know, it's like a subliminal message that there's something wrong with this guy and you can't trust him. So that is the danger with Bernie. And I've been thinking about that. The analogy with our system is just smear the person enough. They will, and I don't say this easily. It's very depressing to me. I'm not even a Democrat anymore. I'm green. But the idea that the only person who's really progressive will not be given the opportunity to get the nomination, they'll steal it at the convention with the superdelegates. But I think they just have implanted this doubt in people's mind. In Bernie's case, it's what they call the Bernie blackout, where they just ignore him. Where even, you know, PBS, they did a story, hour-long story about Iowa and didn't mention him, apparently. Just did not mention. Polls show him ahead of everybody else, or maybe the second, but don't mention him at all. So you don't mention him. You smear him. Now they're calling him an anti-Semite. So a Jew is being called an anti-Semite. And this is the kind of, I'm sure there are self-hating Jews, but Bernie Sanders is not among them. No, he's not. So this is what they're going to do. It's going to be a combination of the media trying to disappear him or smearing him. And that will raise enough doubt with enough people. Then Bloomberg gets in. Nobody really wants him, but he has enough money to do damage. And
I was glad for Bloomberg getting in the race.
Because?
Myself. Because I thought that Bloomberg would split the vote, the centrist vote,
mm-hmm.
that he would end up undermining Buttigieg and Biden.
Uh-huh.
And that would help Sanders, ultimately. That Bloomberg running would help Bernie Sanders win the nomination. I want Hillary Clinton to run. I think it would just be a real shit show around the DNC if we had Biden, Bloomberg, and Hillary Clinton all running to be the nominee.
It would be funny if nothing else. It would be hilarious. But I sort of see your point. But already they're saying, you see what happened in England. You can't be too far left. People don't want it. And I think. Well, I'm not surprised, but that argument, the smearing, the disappearing him, cumulatively, it all hurts. And this will be, they will use all of these weapons to keep him from getting the nomination. So that what happens, even people who want what he's talking about start to doubt. Well, maybe they are right that we can't have fill in the blank, free college or Medicare for all or anything or increase the minimum wage. Maybe this is a bad thing. So people are convinced that there's a danger in pushing for the things that they need. So I think all of these things are going to be used to keep Sanders from getting the nomination in the first place. And if he should get the nomination, turning their backs on him and letting Trump win again. I don't put it past them to do that either.
Now, why is it that Trump could withstand almost every media organization in the country? I'm not going to say smearing him, but giving him very negative coverage, which I think was mostly deserved, going into the 2016 election and win. And someone like Corbyn or Sanders might be more vulnerable to media smears or negative coverage.
Because Trump spoke to something that the rest of us fell asleep on. And that is the appeal. In Trump's case, the biggest appeal was racism. I believe that when I look back on it, although I still blame Hillary and the Democrats for losing, when he said, I'm going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it, I believe he got millions of votes in one fell swoop. I really do. And he also, he spoke to things. He pulled enough people away by saying things like, I don't know if you recall when he said, I want the Republican Party to be the working people's party. That's supposed to be a Democratic Party line. When he talked about bringing industrial jobs back to the United States, that appealed to many people who were not out and out racist. And I think his support has fallen into several categories. But there are people who they don't have the lives they expected to have. And that could be, you could call that the entitlement of white privilege. And I think it is. But the fact remains, people know their standard of living has fallen. They know that their kids will have worse opportunities than they have. And for somebody to claim, even though it was a lie, I'm going to bring these living wage jobs back to the United States, bring manufacturing back to the United States. That got him votes. And why shouldn't it? I'm not going to necessarily condemn someone if you vote for somebody who said that, especially when the other side isn't saying anything about it. And he opposed the trade agreements. That's another thing. They just signed Democrats and Trump just worked out a trade agreement. So, and when he said he was against NAFTA and TPP because they hurt workers, that's an argument Democrats, but those are Democratic policy plans. So they couldn't turn against it. So I think he got people who always vote Republican. He got people who were for whom the racism was an appeal. He got people when he talked about helping working people. He got some of them. So, and he ended up in the, you know, with the Democrats screwing up, he got enough people to eke out an Electoral College victory. And also, the Democrats don't do anything to protect, Black people's votes. There's voter suppression in all of those states. And you don't hear them say anything. A few weeks ago, there was a story about a vote purge in Ohio. And the story, at least in the New York Times story, was about volunteers who went through the rolls and discovered that a couple hundred thousand people were being purged who were eligible to vote. And I remember reading it and saying to myself, why are volunteers doing this? Don't the Democrats have anybody to protect our votes? So they do it that way, too. So I think all of these things helped Trump. Hillary Clinton didn't help herself. You know, it's now it's in, you know, in vogue to say, oh, her emails were no problem. No, she had a serious legal problem, which was self-inflicted. The fact that she had a server in her house and had classified emails on her server and not the State Department server, it was a serious legal issue. Things like that raised doubts about her. And the other thing, you know, it's funny how Bernie is blamed for her losing just by running and losing. But the fact that he did better than expected was an indication that she had an enthusiasm problem. And the Democrats should have really doubled down on getting out every vote. But that's phony. And I want to say this, too. You know, people act, and it was only 2008. It's not that long ago. She and Barack Obama had a knockdown, drag-out primary fight. It ended with neither one of them. He had more delegates than she had, but he didn't have enough to get the nomination. It was much closer than her fight against Bernie Sanders, much closer. But he still won. So this argument that having opposition means that you can't win is just a lie. And it's another excuse meant to shut us up and to keep us from asking for anything progressive.
Do you want Sanders to get the nomination this time around?
I do. I, you know, if I were still a Democrat, I still have issues. You know, if you care about foreign policy and peace there, you can't even back the Democrats anymore. But of the Democrats, he is the best one. And for these issues to be put back on the table, these are things that, you know, starting with Reagan, the shift has moved so far to the right. You know, nowadays, Medicare and Medicaid could not be passed today. I'm convinced it couldn't be passed today. So now it's always, how are you going to pay for this? And, you know, it's big spending. And he's the one who's saying, yeah, we have the money to do this. Yes, we can do this. And for someone to affirm that politics can and is supposed to meet the needs of the people is something very important. I also think they all move to the right when they get in. So you have to have somebody who's as far to the left as possible, I think, since you know that's the move they're going to make. But when I see how people are suffering, I mean, I guess you know the statistics of half of all jobs are low-wage jobs. And for the federal minimum wage to be like $8 or something crazy, I mean, even this $15 an hour they talk about is still not enough.
No, but it's a good move. I think that would be a good thing for it to get through probably. And I know my own daughter got a job that's $15 an hour in Eugene, and she's like feeling like she's flush now because she'd been working for 10 for a while. So it was a big jump. My question now is, first of all, who is the Green Party candidate going to be? Do you know, or has it been decided
who's going to be running? It's contested. And there are four or five people running, two who are considered the most serious. And the Greens will choose their candidate next July.
It comes down to whoever Putin wants, right?
Russian assets, of course.
Right. And then the second question is, do you think that Sanders will get the nomination? Or do you think we're going to be, if not him, do you think, who will it be?
It's not clear to me who it's going to be. They're going to cheat him out of it. And with all of the things that I've just talked about, they're going to make sure it's not him. But I can't tell who it will be. They're united in wanting to stop him. But I don't think Bloomberg even wants it. His goal is to stop Bernie. I don't think he wants to be president.
He wants to stop Bernie, but why? That doesn't make any sense to me. If he wants to stop Bernie, he should throw some money behind, I don't know, one of the candidates he thinks can get the nomination. He can't get the nomination. All he's doing is pulling votes away from people like him. I don't see why he thinks that this will stop Bernie.
Well, I think his strategy is to not even enter the early states, these tiny states that decide for the rest of us who the president's going to be. But anyway, he'll come in later in New York and other places where he can use his money to get a lot of delegates, and then he can have a say at the convention. And whoever he's going to be a broker. Yeah,
he's going to try to broker the nomination at the convention.
Yeah, before. Nobody says no to the rich guy either. So if he has enough support to muddy the waters, he can help choose the nominee. It's interesting to me that Biden is still, some of them still want Biden. He is such a train wreck. He is dumb. I never thought he was like a great intellect, but he's much dumber than I thought. I see Trump beating him in debates. And this story about his son in Ukraine is horrible. It's like, why would you want him to be your candidate? That's not a good story to have out there. I mean, they'll try to say it's all about fighting Russia, but one of the things we found out with Trump's victory is a lot of white Republican voters don't care about the things we were told they cared about. So, you know, Hillary Clinton said he's Putin's puppet and blah, blah, blah. They didn't give a shit. I'm sorry, care. I shouldn't curse, I know. I hope you can edit that out. They didn't give a hoot. But they didn't care. So I don't think, you know, if the Democrats think that talking about Putin and talking about Ukraine and the truth of Ukraine is very damning, the United States helped overthrow. They chose side in Ukraine's internal divisions and backed the far right, some of whom are out and out neo-Nazis, to overthrow an elected president. And Ukraine is now a failed state with the civil war, thanks to Barack Obama. But they turn, you know, so you turn Putin into a demon. So no, you know, it's only nerds like me and 10 other people who know anything about what I just said. And you just, you know, Russia's evil, evil, evil. So that's what Biden will say. I was fighting Putin or, you know, something like that. But the story of his, you know, his drug addict son being given this $1 million job is not something you would want out there. And if, as I said before, if Trump had been smarter, he would have just said, all right, let him get the nomination. I'm going to spend time talking about that. So Biden is very right wing. He always was. That's one of the reasons Obama chose him, was to shore up people who had doubts about him. Right wing.
It's like he was Obama's Lieberman, basically.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, and so I don't know if he's going to get the nomination. I feel like when I first heard he was going on the No Malarkey tour.
Yes, I know.
What is he? I mean, who's advising him? And then I thought, well, maybe he's just trying to shore up his Southern support with that kind of language, and maybe I'm out of touch.
I don't know. It's like, the South is solidly Republican because.
Talking about for the nomination.
Yeah. That means Democrats in the South are all black people, and there's nothing about no malarkey that attracts them. I think he's trying to, you know, his whole thing. I'm Joe from Scranton. I'm from a hard scrabble working class place. And, you know, no malarkey kind of goes with that crazy image. And it's also him, you know, he's not that swift. And so I don't know. It's just, it's funny. It's like, I'm like, he's going for the 90-year-old vote. I'm like, come on, what, really? And so I know he's 80 years old or close to it, but
yeah, that's true. Okay, so that's the other thing is, if he gets, okay, it's weird that the two top contenders for the nomination, I think, are both nearly 80 years old.
Yes.
That is a strange situation.
Yeah, it is.
I like Bernie, and I actually want him to be president. I don't think, and I'll bring this up in a moment, I don't think he'll necessarily have a lot of success as president, but I would like him to be there. But I think that, why is it that in all the years that Bernie's been in politics, he hasn't had anyone come along to be kind of his pupil, and to why hasn't he been grooming his replacement?
Well, the Democrats have really silenced the left voices. There were always a few leftists in Congress. You know, you had Wellstone, and he, you know, died tragically. In the House, you had people like Dennis Kucinich. There was always a reservoir of people, but the Democrats got rid of them. And Bernie, you know, he has been a criticism of his. He's supposedly not a Democrat, but Democrats in Vermont keep other people from running against him. So, and he votes with the Democratic caucus. So they're like, all right, Bernie, we'll just leave you alone. So it's, and I think Obama's success as president, it sort of keeps you from developing a bench, because, you know, you've got this guy, he's a popular president. And so you don't need to cultivate anybody new. That's what you have. And all that time, the person who was supposed to succeed Obama was Hillary Clinton. It was like, you know, it was supposed to be her turn, but he, you know, defeated her. And it's like, okay, so next time is Hillary's turn. So all the focus and all the money went to her.
I think it's not so much Obama's success, but the fact that he didn't dispatch Hillary Clinton when he beat her, that he brought her in.
To his own coalition,
and brought that old Clinton machine in, because, you know, they thought it was her turn in 2008.
Right.
And that kept him from really developing his own machine and his own power.
Well, Obama, I think it's the same at the end. It's like the same machine, really, I think. Because as I pointed out, it was so close, he had to give her something to get her to drop out. And I think it cracks me up when she's like, oh, took Bernie too long to drop out. And I was like, they had to drag her out kicking and screaming. I'm sure they did get wild horses to finally drag her out. It finally took people backing her to say, you've got to leave. She had to be pushed out. She thought she was going to pull off something and get the nomination, even though she had fewer delegates. So he sort of had to bring her in. But there were so many problems with Obama's success. You know, nobody wants to talk about the failures of the Democratic Party during that time. They lost 1,000 seats across the country. And that only points to a lack of money. They did not put money into local races. So the congressional seats, the state houses. And I think that ended up helping Trump. For the Democrats to have just, there's no reason for those Midwestern states to be in Republican hands. I mean, now there's some mix up, but for a while they were all Republican states. And that's just because the Democrats didn't contest them.
We're staying within the frame of electoral politics. And one of the things that the Corbyn defeat, the Labor Party's being in shambles, has made me really kind of nostalgic for the Occupy Wall Street moment.
Yes.
And, you know, which, by the way, we're coming up. It's going to be a decade since that happened pretty soon.
Yeah.
And that's shocking. We've been talking, you and I think.
I know. What was that, 2010, 2011?
Yeah. God. Anyhow, so, I mean, we started talking before Occupy came along. I think I invited you onto the early podcast.
I did.
Yeah. So, my God, I was younger then. I didn't even know it. So anyhow, but I long for the days where the left, at least part of the left, thought of itself as really being in opposition to the entirety of the society. That, yeah. And, you know, not that, I mean, that was kind of an ill-defined way to put it, and I don't think that's the right way to put it ultimately, but there was I think it was countercultural, which was a downside to it again, but at least it had its aim was to say, we want no part of this structured world as it is. We want to create something new. And now I feel as though we've all become, we kind of all, after Trump's victory, the radical left just got funneled directly into the Democratic Party. And for the most part, even young people through the DSA. Yeah. And this is something that I've picking up from Chris Catrone. I should probably give him some credit here, but I think it's absolutely true. I mean, I noticed it myself, but didn't put it in these terms. And so now our ship is tied to the bigger tanker that is the Democratic Party. And if they go down, what happens to the left, the actual radical left?
I mean, well, Trump's victory. First of all, the first thing they say is anybody who didn't vote for Hillary is a spoiler. And so people are afraid. Even those people who are inclined to act in opposition to the Democrats are afraid to. And because of this unexplainable thing that happened, you know, this is why they do propaganda. So it's your fault if you question Hillary, if you didn't go out for her, if you voted green, if you did anything else, it's your fault that Trump is president. And that is a heavy accusation that most people don't know how to fight against, because the left was weak to begin with. And, you know, and they get all this help with that narrative, and no talk about how the Democrats let Trump win. So that automatically silenced a lot of people, and a lot of people are left in the hopes that the Democrats will be better. Not that they will be gone, or there's anything else to replace them. So if that's your inclination, then it's like this cataclysm happened and it's Trump. So that sucks the life out of a lot of energy for the little bit of true left that we even had. So that's a problem. And so I think that was huge. I think the left would have been better off, frankly, if Hillary won. I think people would be more vocal and less afraid. People are just afraid. And because they don't hear any counter narrative that, you know, she lost because they were too right wing. Also just the idea and the fact that, you know, that Occupy was crushed, not to put, you know, too fine a point on it. They got rid of it. And a lot of people were co-opted. You know, these foundations come along, the nonprofit industrial complex, and, you know, people have to live. So there are people who will go over to that side. And in the absence of a coherent argument that we must have something completely different, that we must build a left movement that can partly electoral politics, but partly movement politics, so that people now see being part of a movement as demonstrating on behalf of Jeff Sessions. I don't know if you remember that when there was some, and I knew it was bogus all along, and he was still attorney general. There was something, Trump was going to get rid of him, and by doing so, he was going to get out of Russiagate, and I don't even remember the details. But people who call themselves progressives were demonstrating on behalf of Jeff Sessions remaining attorney general. That's how bad it became. And that's what happens in the absence of anyone advocating for the left. And that means advocating against the Democratic Party. I think that's the other thing that we need to be clear about. They are the problem. And we cannot have the world we need as long as they are in power.
I mean, if we ultimately, if the left ultimately, like the radical left, the people who say, like, have an analysis of capitalism and want to get beyond it, they're anarchists, maybe they're Marxists, like I try to be, maybe they're ecologically minded and want to have a more sustainable world. But if they cannot bring their project together as its own project, apart from the Democratic Party, if all of this, that all the left noise that gets made is all it's aimed at is getting more people to vote for Joe Biden, then we're lost. We're never, ever going to develop past this deadlock that we're in right now. The other thing I can't help but think about is 2004 and John Kerry. Do you remember how, you know, like, and how I felt after he lost? But I mean, I despised, of course, George W. Bush, you know, Jr. I absolutely, though, despised Al Gore and Bill Clinton as well, right? And I didn't ever vote for Clinton. I saw him as, because here's just my little background. The original invasion of Iraq, the Gulf War, was definitive for me, and the fact that Bill Clinton didn't come out and say he opposed it when he ran, meant to me that I couldn't vote for him. That he would have done, if he would have done the same thing, I couldn't vote for him. There was no difference between these two, as far as I was concerned, and that was what I was most concerned about then. So anyway, flash forward to 2004. I don't like John Kerry. I don't think he's good enough either. He's not even talking about really getting us out of Iraq in any serious way, right? I mean, but I voted for him, and I even campaigned for him a little in my way, right, on social media and stuff. I advocated that people vote for him because I wanted to get rid of this greater evil, George W. Bush. And he lost, and he lost. And I thought to myself, you know, if I'm going to struggle and lose, I want to struggle and lose for something I actually believe in.
Sure. Well, that's the situation we're in, where the Democrats don't even bother. One of the things that makes me so angry when they get mad, they target people who don't vote for them. They don't even go through the motions of appealing to the left. They don't even say, okay, let's pick an issue. Let's throw them a bone. Nope, it's nothing. You don't get anything. We're not going to talk about anything. But if we lose, we're going to point fingers at you. I agree with you. I'm going to vote for who I want. I can't vote for, you know, war and peace is still a very big issue for me. And even people like Bernie and AOC, the United States is killing people in Venezuela with sanctions. They are depriving them of food and medicine, and as surely as if they were dropping bombs, they're killing people there. But the Democrats don't say anything, and in Iran and in other countries too. So we have this problem where we have to get rid of the Democrats. We have to build left politics, and it cannot be done with them. And my argument is, you know, when they keep screwing up and losing, that also helps with the argument. It's like, well, they're not even serious about winning. All they want to do is win the presidency so they can cut deals with Republicans. They don't even give a shit. So for me, it's not difficult, but Trump changes everything.